The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Please be seated. Good morning, everyone. We have five cases before us today, three of them being argued and two of them being submitted on the briefs. Just for the record, I will note the two submitted cases. The first one is number 2008-3255, Jolie versus the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And the second case is number 2008-3305, again, Jolie versus the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Again, those two cases are being submitted on the briefs without oral argument. The first case in which we'll hear oral argument today is number 2008-7051, Emanaker versus the Department of Veterans Affairs. Mr. Jakes, just want to confirm before we start, you've allotted 12 minutes for your regular argument and 3 for your rebuttal?
That's correct.
Is that correct? Okay, well, you can start, and you obviously know how our lighting system works.
Good morning.
You can start whenever you're ready.
May it please the court. This case concerns the interpretation of 38 U.S.C. Section 1111 and what is clear and unmistakable evidence to rebut the presumption of sound condition. It's our position that the Court of Veterans Appeals incorrectly interpreted the statute.
Now, but before you get to that, I'd like you to address the government's contention, as I understand it, that you didn't explicitly raise this issue until your reply brief in the Veterans Court. Is that correct?
Your Honor, I think it's how you characterize the issue in the case. We did specifically refer
let me rephrase it somewhat. In your opening brief, not your reply brief, in your opening brief in the Court of Veterans Appeals, did you state in so many words, clearly, that it was your position that medical judgment alone is not sufficient to constitute clear and unmistakable evidence?
I think there are two places in our opening brief that we cited to. First is at A559.
What?
A559.
I have the copies of the brief.
In the summary of the argument.
A559.
Where we state the board failed to follow the law and that Dr. Kilhenny's opinion is insufficient as a matter of law to satisfy the clear and unmistakable evidence.
But there's no reference in that statement to anything about medical judgment, is there?
Not in that statement. I think if you also look at 563, we also point out on that page the board relied exclusively on Dr. Kilhenny's report and addendum for the exclusive basis of his decision.
But again, you did not refer in so many words or make any reference to this question of medical judgment, did you?
We did not specifically.
And is there any reason why you didn't raise that before the Veterans Court in your opening brief?
Your Honor, I think the issue consistently throughout this case has been whether Dr. Kilhenny's opinion by itself is enough to rebut the presumption.
Well, that may have been the issue, but let me phrase it a little differently. Do you think, reading your opening brief, it would have been clear either to the government or to the court that you were making this issue? That's what's bothering me.
As I said, Your Honor, I believe the issue is whether or not his opinion standing alone satisfies the standard. We did make the additional argument that under the statute, medical judgment alone could not satisfy it, but it's really part and parcel of the same argument.
If I can pick up on Judge Friedman's question, what troubles me about the opening brief in the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is that it seems to assume that as long as if Dr. Kilkenny's opinion had been emphatic enough, regardless of whether it had been an opinion or a judgment, any of that, that that would have satisfied the standard that you were suggesting to the court. And I read to you from 565, you say, had his opinion been clear and unmistakable, i.e. undebatable, then he would have simply omitted the "it is likely as not" language, which suggests to me that the argument you're making is predicated, as much of the rest of the brief seemed to suggest, on the problem with the "it is as likely as not" problem, whereas now you're focusing on the problem that this is a medical judgment and that under the regulation and by extrapolation based on your legislative history, under the statute, medical judgment standing alone is not enough. And that seems to me a quite different and indeed even inconsistent argument.
I think at bottom they are both related to the same argument, which is whether his opinion was satisfactory. There is one basis, we argued the factual basis, that the content of his opinion, the fact that he used the terminology, at least as likely as not, was not sufficient. And I have to admit that was our primary argument in our opening brief.
Mm-hmm. Do you contend that a doctor's opinion can never constitute, standing alone, a doctor's opinion can never constitute clear and unmistakable evidence?
Yes, Your Honor, that's our position.
How could that be? Suppose you have a very preeminent doctor who examines the veteran and does all sorts of tests on him, and on the basis of that concludes that this particular condition was or was not existent at the time of his induction. Why isn't that good enough?
I believe if you read Section 1111 in conjunction with Section 1132, and I think the government agrees with this, medical judgment alone is not enough.
Well, what is medical judgment?
Well, it's a doctor's opinion.
I suppose every medical judgment embodies medical principles.
At some point, yes. But there is a difference between what the regulation calls medical judgment and medical principles. Medical principle, I think we illustrated in the Junstrom case, was something like an incubation period, which would conclusively establish that the condition was pre-existing.
And that's the gonorrhea case, right?
It is.
Well, suppose, though, that the doctor simply said, my opinion, this is a doctor who's well-versed, it's a urologist, let's say, my opinion is that this condition could not have been aggravated in service because the course of the condition is well-known. That's an opinion.
Yes.
But are you saying that that wouldn't be enough?
Yes. That's medical judgment.
Well, but it's medical judgment that's predicated on firmly established medical principles. I mean, unless he... Are you saying that he has to put in a footnote and saying, the reason this is my opinion is that I know that this principle is well established, and what's more, here's the treatise, the general urological treatise, that shows that it's so.
If all that he had was his opinion, I think that still falls under medical judgment.
Well, then my hypothesis was that this is a well-versed doctor who is very conversant with these medical principles, and he's simply giving you an opinion, which, although not expressly based on these medical principles, is nonetheless based on those principles.
I think illustrating it with the Junstrom case, that was a conclusive fact. The medical principle really decided it. You didn't need the doctor's opinion to apply the medical principle. You could determine that without it, that the incubation period was longer than the time of service. And I think that is what is meant by medical principle. Here we do have medical judgment if you look at what Dr. Kilkenny actually said.
The question is, is his opinion based solely on medical judgment or on something else? Because as I read the board's opinion and the Veterans Court's affirmance of it, what they said was, in addition to his judgment, he based that judgment, among other things, on his thorough neurological examination of the veteran.
He didn't examine the veteran.
Let me put it a little differently. What more do you normally do? I mean, if you people rely on and follow the advice of doctors who, after conducting whatever examinations they think appropriate, give you their best medical judgment that this is the condition that you're suffering and that the most appropriate treatment would be to take this particular medication. And we rely, every time we go to the doctor, we rely on that, or even to the dentist. The dentist tells you, you need to have this particular tooth removed. It's his judgment,
yes.
But we tend to rely on it. What's the matter with that, with the evidence that they were presented? That's my question.
I don't question that it's the quality of the evidence. We're not here arguing that. What we're arguing is that the statute that creates this presumption in favor of the veteran says medical judgment is not enough.
Medical judgment alone.
Well, the statute, you say, says it. I mean, that's your interpretation of the statute predicated on the legislative history. There's nothing in the statute.
And reading it in light of 1132, which does talk about medical judgment.
Right, but it doesn't have the medical judgment alone. It allows medical judgment, in fact.
Of course, the Harris
case. Now, but I don't know. Were you finished with Judge Friedman's
question? I'm not sure I'm satisfied, but go ahead.
Well, I didn't want to cut him off.
What?
Finish
the question.
Yes. Okay. Let me, if I could, turn your attention to the regulation, which whatever one interprets the statute as saying, there's no doubt that the medical judgment alone exclusion is found in the regulation.
Yes.
My question, though, is this. The regulation, up until 2005, if I understand it correctly, referred only to the inception part of the two-part inquiry. I mean,
yes.
At that point, the language in 3.304B had not been added that says was not aggravated by such service. That was added to make sure that clear and unmistakable evidence applied to both prongs.
Yes.
But what it strikes me in reading 3.304B1 that language does not seem to apply to the aggravation prong. It seems to apply to the inception problem. And I direct your attention specifically to the sentence that says all history of pre-service existence of condition will blah 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 will be considered together with all other material evidence in determinations as to inception. And then the sentence determinations, presumably these determinations we've just gotten finished referring to as to inception, should not be based on medical judgment alone as distinguished from acceptable medical principles. Why isn't that regulatory language limited to the inception problem and not necessarily applicable to the aggravation problem?
I think there are two answers. First, in the first part of B, it does refer to and was not aggravated.
Right. That was a change which is intended to, and successfully intended, had the effect of bringing the clear and unmistakable evidence standard into aggravation.
Yes.
Everybody agrees with that. The question is, did they also somehow implicitly make the rest of the regulation, excuse me, applicable to aggravation?
I believe with that change, a fair interpretation is that it did. And I also believe that the government is not contesting that point, that they have agreed that medical judgment alone is not satisfactory for the aggravation prong as well. And you can also reach that from our statutory argument based on the reading of Section 1111 and 1132, which distinguishes between clear and unmistakable evidence and medical judgment, where medical judgment was left out in the statute.
Do you happen to know if there's anything that the VA has said, either in a general counsel opinion or in any other context, that addresses this question of whether this is limited to inception as opposed to aggravation?
I'm not aware of anything.
Okay. Yeah, I'm finished.
Thank you, Mr. Hicks. You're into your rebuttal now, but we'll restore your full rebuttal, and we'll hear from the government. Ms. Holt?
What, if I could start you right off on the question that I left off with Mr. Jakes. What is the government's position with respect to the application of 3.304B1 as to aggravation?
Your Honor.
And specifically the medical judgment sentence.
Your Honor, the government's interpretation is that although I think you are correct that 303.4B1 does technically apply to the first prong, that it does apply, the government does interpret that to apply to the second prong.
Based on what?
Aggravation. The statute itself, going back to 1943, actually did have the aggravation prong in it. I believe what you're referring to is the Wagner case made clear that if there was not a pre-existing condition noted, that clear and unmistakable evidence had
we're dealing with two different issues here.
Okay.
First, there's no question but that 3.304B establishes for regulatory purposes that clear and unmistakable evidence applies to both prongs. My question was, does it also establish that the no medical judgment standing alone provision applies to both clauses? And if so, textually, where do you get that?
Your Honor, the government and the Veterans Administration has always interpreted it that way, that clear and unmistakable evidence.
Do you have any, is there any written interpretation anywhere that I could look to see that that's right? Or
no, Your Honor, the Veterans Administration relies on 3.304B1, the statement that because medical judgment alone, they have interpreted it not that medical judgment alone is not clear and unmistakable evidence because clear and unmistakable.
What do you mean when you say interpreted it? Do you mean in the course of administering the statute, they just take that position that there's nothing, either as Judge Bryson suggested, of an opinion from the General Counsel, or have they taken that position consistently in briefs, or what? Or is it just this is sort of understood that that's how the statute is to be applied, the regulation is to be applied?
Your Honor, based on the legislative history and the change in 1943, removing the language medical judgment and inserting the language clear and unmistakable evidence, the VA's opinion since then and its rational interpretation of that legislative change as enacted in regulation.
But where is that interpretation reflected? I think that's the question I want to find, get an answer to if there is any. I take it there's nothing published, is there?
No, Your Honor. We've looked and have been unable to find anything. The I guess what is published, that interpretation is borne out in 3.304B1.
When you say the VA has taken this position, what you're really saying is this is, in administering the statute and the regulation, this is how the VA treats it.
Yes, Your Honor. The VA has always treated, since 1943, that medical judgment alone is not enough for clear to establish clear and unmistakable evidence. I will say that the
unmistakable evidence of aggravation?
Yes, Your Honor. However, the VA does not interpret medical judgment alone to be medical opinion of a doctor. That seems to be the difference.
What exactly do you mean by medical judgment alone? Are you saying that anything said by a doctor is not medical judgment?
Your Honor, medical judgment, as the VA and the government interprets it in 3.304B1, is the judgment of, for example, the regional officer, a VA employee, the board. The VA
itself, not a doctor.
Where
do you get that? Where, can you give me the best textual support for that proposition? Because I looked, you alluded to this argument in your brief, but,
yes,
but then you said, well, you know, if you read all the statutes together, here's a reference to opinions, here's a reference to evidence, here's a reference to judgment, and therefore we conclude that judgment means maybe something like a board member saying, well, this is what I think.
Your Honor, we certain.
What's your best textual evidence for that interpretation of the term judgment?
The textual evidence, Your Honor, the best that we have is the legislative history. One of the key concerns in the legislative history was apparently what was happening in World War II was that people, men and women, were being brought into the armed forces very quickly, you know, turned over for battle, basically run down, being discharged, and you had VA members alone making a judgment as to whether there was a pre-existing condition or any aggravation.
Well, let me ask you this. There isn't any place that the VA has written down medical judgment means something other than an opinion of a doctor.
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
The VA has looked and has not been able to find it.
Okay,
point,
now,
that says that.
Are you familiar with this court has, well, our predecessor court, the Court of Claims, has a series of cases dealing with Army regulations that address disability retirement and use exactly the same formula. That is to say, based on medical evidence but not medical judgment alone. And in the course of those opinions, the court has, and Siegel is the case that's probably the leading case. Are you familiar with that? Your Honor, I apologize,
I am not.
All right. Well, they weren't raised by the party, so you're not really expecting
it. Makes me feel better, Your Honor.
What troubles me is there, the court said, well, medical judgment, i.e., something that couldn't be considered, would include something that was not based on well-established medical principles, such as, and including, an opinion given by no less than the Surgeon General. Now, if that rule is the right rule to apply, and those cases are binding on us, and the language is identical, then it seems to me very difficult, unless the VA has clearly indicated in some fashion that would be subject to our deferring to, that a different meaning is intended with respect to this language in this regulation, that we ought to be bound by that language, shouldn't we?
Your Honor, two responses to that. First, that question then goes to really one of our initial arguments that the argument raised by Mr. Imanaka was not raised below. And therefore, the Veterans Court itself, which hears only veterans' cases, which is the expert in veterans' law, has not had the opportunity to opine upon this issue. And so to that extent, because this exact argument was not raised below, this court does not have jurisdiction to consider it.
The argument was not made below, or it was not made below in a timely fashion?
It was not made below in a timely fashion.
It was made, but it was made too late.
It was raised in the reply brief, Your Honor, which is too late, and this court in Carbino has
held it. So it was made. This isn't a case where there's a new argument appeared for the first time in an appeal.
No, Your Honor, it appeared for the first time in the reply brief,
Let me ask you one thing. I just want to be sure that I understand that you say that the VA's position is that a medical judgment need not necessarily be made by a physician. Is that right?
Your Honor, the VA's position is that medical judgment, that term medical judgment alone, would refer to, for example, the decision of a regional officer or board
member, which may or may not be made by a physician. Is that right?
There is language in cases, certainly, that overlaps the decision. I mean, a medical opinion is, and you look to, for example, 5109 and 7109, that the board and secretary can ask for a medical opinion from a physician. And so that denotes
something. A medical opinion is something other than a medical judgment.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's a nice distinction, but it's a little hard for me to comprehend what it is.
It is, Your Honor. As I said, the VA has their interpretation is that, you know, clearly from the statute, the VA can go and rely on a medical opinion. It can ask an independent doctor for a medical opinion and rely on that. What the VA
But a medical opinion necessarily has to involve medical judgment, doesn't it? Unless you define medical judgment differently. But anyhow, I mean, one of the things that's reflected in the physician's opinion is his judgment as to what the condition is and what is the most appropriate way to treat it.
Your Honor, the terms, while used separately and differently throughout the regulatory scheme and the statutory scheme, are not defined. That is correct. And in this case, I think that's another example, because what we have here is, even if this court goes to the question of and looks to the medical opinion of Dr. Kilhenny, his medical opinion, it's not just his opinion. It's based upon medical principles, medical evidence,
medical history. Won't that be true of every medical opinion? I mean, the doctor isn't going to look and say, I think this patient suffers from such and such a condition, and the reason for my opinion is that it's my experience that men who wear striped ties generally have this disease. That wouldn't be, I mean, it might be a medical opinion, but it would be a worthless one. Every medical opinion is going to reflect a professional judgment.
Your Honor, and actually that I think answers your question. You're exactly right that you would hope that a medical doctor would not make that opinion because that opinion would be worthless. But a medical doctor could make an opinion that you know, that the board in looking at does not believe reaches to the level of clear and unmistakable
evidence. What's
bothering
me about all of this is that we're trying to determine these difficult issues by applying principles of semantics. We use very similar words, medical opinion, medical judgment, medical principles. I suppose someone might say medical views and so on, and we draw fine distinctions between those, and then on the basis of those distinctions we say, okay, on that ground we now hold that, and lo and behold the veteran does or doesn't get benefits. I wish there was some way we could get sort of to the guts of this thing rather than looking at these what seem to me to be extremely technical distinctions.
There are definitely, Your Honor, some technical distinctions. I think at its base, there are two responses. First, it is clear from the statute, including Section 5109 and 7109, that the Veterans Administration can ask for and rely upon the medical opinion, as it calls it. It can go to an independent physician, and the Veterans Administration can say, we need help. Please review the file. Please talk to this person. Please do an examination. Please give us your medical opinion. And so what really is being asked for here by Mr. Immenacher is a decision that opinion that comes back from a medical doctor could not be relied upon.
Well, no, not exclusively. It couldn't be solely, the sole basis is his argument. I don't think he's suggesting that that can't be in connection with other supporting evidence.
That is correct, Your Honor. But then again, that goes to, for example, in this case, whether there is actually simply a medical opinion or not.
Let me ask you this, to make sure, you may have answered this question already, but I want to make sure that we're not overlooking anything. With respect to setting aside your argument about the implications of 5109 and 7109 and any other statutes that may have reference to the term without defining it of medical judgment versus medical opinion, is there anything prior to today, any point prior to today, that the VA has ever suggested the distinction that you're drawing anywhere?
Your Honor, there is...
In a brief, other than your own brief in this case, obviously, but in a brief, in an OGC opinion, in a board decision, is there anything we could look at to say this is the Secretary's position before today? Because as you know, if we're looking at deference, we don't defer as readily to a position taken by an advocate in the middle of an appeal. Saying, well, this is our position. Well, it's convenient to take such a position because that allows you to win the case if you defer to it. But if there's a past pattern of construing the regulation in this way, then that's something to which we can defer. Is there in this case, and if so, what is it?
Your Honor, what there is in this case, and we cite in our brief, is the Olbert opinion and also the Colvin opinion. And for example, Olbert held that the board may not simply reject the medical opinion given, equivocal though they may be, by using its own medical judgment. Again, suggesting that the board cannot just put aside a medical opinion of a physician and instead rule upon its medical judgment alone.
So for the use of the term opinion in juxtaposition with the word judgment, you think is the way that the Secretary is saying that judgment is exclusively that of a non-medical professional?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there anything better than that you've got?
Your Honor, we believe that the Colvin opinion and the Obert opinion both support this view.
Is Colvin better in that regard than Obert?
They essentially do say the same thing, Your Honor.
So you would say that, in other words, what you're saying is if a physician renders a view in a case and says, and assume it's a case where that physician, he or she, has examined the complete record and has looked at everything and in the record from a medical standpoint, has conducted tests of the veteran, has reviewed all the service records, then that physician says, it is my considered medical judgment that, and then goes on to articulate a view. In that case, you wouldn't say that that's deficient simply because the word medical judgment is used instead of opinion, would you?
No, Your Honor.
Because the words are coming from a physician. This is your view, is what you've been discussing with Judge Bryson. Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, what if the veteran who's examined by this physician has a condition that the physician cannot confidently diagnose, but the physician says, you know, I'm not sure what this is. It's a very strange condition. We just don't have a good... There's nothing in the treatises or the experience, medical experience, that really pins this down as to what it is. But I've been a doctor for a long time, and it's my opinion that this is a condition which has probably been with this person for a long time. No medical, not based on any medical principle at all, let's say, and the doctor admits that, but says that's what my opinion is, or he might even say that's what my judgment is. Is it your view that if that's all there is in the case, that that is okay, it's sufficient to support a conclusion that there's clear and unmistakable evidence of non-aggravation?
Your medical opinion can be sufficient to support clear and unmistakable evidence.
Standing by itself.
Yes. In that case, then that is a factual determination that is made by the VA in the first instance.
Even if the medical opinion is admittedly predicated on no general medical principle, other than the doctor's own experience.
Your Honor, again, then that is a... Every medical opinion... In the first instance, the VA makes a medical judgment of, looks at the evidence, and determines whether it is clear and unmistakable evidence. Our position is simply that a medical opinion alone can, in fact, be clear and unmistakable evidence. In the hypothetical that you have given, it may or may not be. That's a factual determination.
But it could be. You're saying that even though there's no general medical principle there, that nonetheless, that might be sufficient.
That would be a factual determination that would be made by the veterans.
And you say that determination is something committed to the discretion of the VA because it involves weighing the evidence. And people might disagree whether the hypothetical that Judge Bryson posed to you, whether that evidence alone was sufficient. But that's for the VA to decide. And of course, it's reviewed by the board and by the Veterans Court, and if they decide that that evidence is insufficient, it'll be reversed.
Yes, Your Honor. That is absolutely correct.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank
Holt.
You.
Mr. Jakes, we'll hear from you. Mr. Jakes, let's see. We said we would give you your full 3 minutes rebuttal. The government went overtime a bit, so I will give you... 3 additional minutes beyond that, so we'll give you 6 minutes in rebuttal to try and even it out.
Hopefully,
thank you, Mr. Jones.
I won't need that
if you need it.
If you need it, but just I want to try and keep the time even.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think that the argument has established that we're not arguing that the government can't rely on a medical opinion. We're not asking the court to reject the opinion. It's our position that medical judgment, the doctor's opinion alone, is not enough. And I'd like to just point out, this is a very strong presumption to favor the veteran. It applies when this pre-existing condition is not recorded on entrance. And so the government does have to jump through hoops and go pretty far to rebut this presumption, and that's why there has to be clear and unmistakable evidence. And when medical judgment alone is not enough, the government can prove it. We're not contesting the pre-existing condition prong in this case, for example, because there is evidence beyond the doctor's opinion. There's evidence supplied by the veteran himself that he was in an accident. And so I think that's clear. We're focusing on just medical judgment alone. To go back to whether or not we raised this issue in our opening brief, the issue of whether his opinion is sufficient, I believe, was fairly raised. I'd like to just point out that the government, in its brief, did say his opinion was based on medical judgment. The doctor's opinion was based on medical judgment. And it cited the regulation, 3.304B1. And in our reply, we replied to the government's brief, pointing out that medical judgment alone was not sufficient under the statute. So there was an opportunity for the Court of Veterans' Appeals to address this issue because the government had raised medical judgment in saying that the doctor's opinion was based on medical judgment. And finally, I don't think that we've argued, I heard the government argue that there's more than just the doctor's opinion here. I think if you really look at A462, admittedly the doctor examined Mr. Emanaker, but when it comes down to his opinion, he basically says, in patients of this type, occasionally the condition may get worse. And that strikes me as being purely medical judgment and not based on any examination or any other evidence of the patient.
And to make sure that I've got your position right with respect to what it takes to cross over from established medical principles to medical judgment, if the doctor, again, to take the, I forget the name of the case, it's the gonorrhea case.
Johnstrom,
that's it. If the doctor says, I have consulted these treatises, and based on those treatises, I can say with great confidence that this is the course of progression of this disease, that's, at that point, no longer a medical judgment?
Well, I think the doctor's opinion could